Well, hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of These Are the Voyages. I'm the Captain, Captain Chase McKinney, and joining me once again for, stuff that's all sugary and spicy and everything nicey, my dear friend, Commander David. How are you, good sir?
Hey, not too bad.
Yeah, you are. Not too bad. Not too shabby.
Not too shabby.
Oh boy.
It's always a little weird. I'm not too shabby.
I might be not a little too shabby.
Just yeah. A little bit shabby.
Yeah, but not too shabby.
Yeah, not too shabby.
Now, Commander Eric, on the other hand. I'm kidding, Eric. We love you, dude. Yeah, so Eric is taking some time off to be with the missus. As they celebrate their anniversary. So happy anniversary, Commander Eric and Raquel, on your anniversary. So it's just you and I today, keeping things all hunkered down and, you know, busting out the mashed potato rations once again. So here we are.
Yes, the mashed potatoes. Or did you not bring and meatloaf?
Yum, yum. I actually made some mashed potatoes from scratch the other day. I was just like, I want to make some on a whim and just go there. So I bought like some ribeye and busted out.
That's not how you make mashed potatoes.
What? What? Shut the front door. No way, man. Yeah, the other day, my wife wanted these like steak bite things that I make from time to time. So I bought like these three like decent sized pieces of like ribeye, and got the cast iron skillet out, put it in there with like a bunch of butter, you know, like a little Paula Deen action of like more butter upon butter upon butter type of thing. Yeah. It was great. Little pepper, some salt, and anyways, got it to a temp of like 145, pulled it. Had some of the best color I've ever seen, and what it was great, and yeah, made some mashed potatoes and turned out really good. It weren't lumpy or nothing, so I did something right. Yeah, buddy. Are you hungry yet? Anyone listening hungry yet? Good, that's right where I want you.
Right where I wanted you.
So, but anyway, yeah. Food that was tasty. We're gonna be going to a hockey game here pretty soon as a family. Gonna take the kids to their very first hockey game in person. It's gonna be great.
And hockey's a lot of fun to watch.
It is
live and in person.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're gonna do that. We're gonna make it like a family, like little mini staycation-y thingy, going out and getting a hotel in the Dallas area, do the game, stay in a hotel, and then probably just stay in Dallas for like about a half day or so and do like the aquarium. And there's this thing called like the like a Museum of Illusion or something like that.
Okay,
so we might they got some like kind of cool like things I've like seen pictures of, and like some of our friends have been to it and said some, you know, good things about it. So I think we're going to check it out if time allows, like go to both of them. I think the aquarium opens first, so probably do that for a little while and then hop across town or across the street, wherever it is.
Across the state, you know, into another state, going to Oklahoma, you know, it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. It's across the thing, you know, it's across the thing. Yeah. So yeah, we're looking forward to that. And there we go. Good stuff. Anything going on for you, dude? Like anything? Hockey games, whatever, life stuffs.
I feel like things have been pretty boring around here.
Cool.
Yeah. I bought a new guitar. It's in the background.
Hey. Oh, is that the one that, what is that?
Nobody else can see it.
I know, but it's me. I can see
it. Yeah, the one closest to me.
Okay, that one right there. Yeah. A nice framing with your fingers, by the way.
You're welcome.
appreciate you for that, my dude.
Yeah, no, I mean, things have been relatively quiet. We're just, you know, living and working and all that good jazz. The biggest upcoming thing is I'm going to be trying to finish our attic here in the next couple months.
Okay.
Putting flooring down and insulating and drywalling maybe and running some more lights and outlets and all that sort of stuff. So
that's cool. Okay, so I lived in the Midwest once upon a time, and I had always heard of like finished basements, right? It just becomes like
sure
a second or a third living room or a second den or whatever. But I'm sure it's been out there, but I cannot readily recall a finished attic.
Yeah, I mean, I never really lived in a house. Well, no, that's not true. My grandparents, they had a finished attic, but
okay,
finishing our basement would be a little tricky. The concrete floor is not level. It's old. This is an older house, so I'd have to level the floor, and I don't want to. I don't even want to attempt that. And it's all block wall, and it's not like crazy big. So when you're putting drywall in a basement, you have to have a basically space in between so it can breathe and you don't develop mold and all that. So it doesn't make any sense, but the attic, you know, we a little bit more storage space. I'm thinking of the potential to move my office up there to make more room in our sort of second room and all that kind of stuff. But that's the plan. But yeah, around this area, it's fairly common to have those finished attics because when you think about older houses, they're oftentimes smaller, or less rooms than what people seem to require nowadays. Ashley had told me about like her grandmother's old house, which her sister lives in now. You know, you had four kids in a basically two bedroom, one bathroom house, and that was common.
Sure.
But, you know, a lot of overtime generally, I don't really want to put much to this, but I feel like a lot of the finished attics and so forth seem to have came around like 80s, 90s type of thing. Like, hey, there's this space. Let's go ahead and do something with it.
Yeah.
And it's just extra space, but a lot of houses, at least around this area, have an attic of some sort. That's where you put stuff. So.
Yeah.
So we're just finishing it, making it, you know, kind of nice, and it'll help a little bit when we go to sell this place and, you know, find the next spot.
Cool.
But yeah, cool. It's fun.
Yeah, I think it's a show, right? But like Full House, I think, is like probably one of the best examples I can think of like a finished attic. And maybe like the next closest one would be like Growing Pains. I don't know if you ever watched Growing Pains like on reruns at all.
Not much.
But like at one point in Growing Pains, Kirk Cameron's character, he tries to like, you know, be all independent and kind of carve out his own path and stuff. He ends up like living in his car at one point. And then they basically like renovate the space above the garage. It's a detached garage. And so he kind of has his own space basically, which when that set was done on Growing Pains, like that's a cool setup. I want that personally, but, anyway, 80s, man, I miss that show. Like, did you ever watch Growing Pains?
You know, I'm not much for sitcom TV, and I never really was much for sitcom TV. I think it's just my perception of things. It never felt close to reality for me, so it just wasn't, it really wasn't my thing. I get it. I know a lot of people love, you know, have a lot of the shows that they love, you know, my God, how many people love to still talk about Friends. Never liked it.
I never liked Friends either.
You know, I never got it. A lot of those things, I'm trying to think, like, think of any of them that were really, what was the one with Steve Urkel?
Oh, Family Matters.
Yeah, Family Matters. I remember watching Family Matters.
Yeah.
Back in the day, but yeah, just wasn't really anything that we tend to watch. Honestly, we didn't watch a lot of TV.
Yeah.
Growing up. It really wasn't a staple in our homes very much. We watched movies, mm-hmm. but that was about it.
Yeah. I remember watching like Step by Step. Mainly at my uncle's house, like during like middle of the day, like on reruns, and that was about it. I'd see like some Family Matters, but not much. Like, did I do that? Like, was about all I got from Family Matters. But Growing Pains was like the sitcom that I watched, because there was like, I can't remember what like the block was, but there was like something on like Disney Channel or something like that after school. You know, when we were kids, I wish I can remember what it was, but they just had like this like block of like certain programming, and I ended up watching Growing Pains. And then like it, the part when Leonardo DiCaprio ended up on the show, by the way, as a character, was right about the time that Titanic was coming out in movie theaters. So, I think he would like, the show had like already ended or was about to end or something. So it was just like the timing of like how it was landing and just kind of like capitalizing on his popularity more or less and like what he was doing in the movie. So, yeah. Anyway, I can't find it anywhere. You can usually find most of those things like on streaming stuffs. I can't find it. Just to see if I still like it, but. I mean, it's on places, but you have to pay for it, like pay extra. And I'm like, not going to happen, dude.
No, yeah, that's not always worth it. Fresh Prince. Fresh that's Prince good. Of Bel-Air. I remember watching that a mm-hmm. bit.
Have you seen those things like you can't summon an entire generation with just one song?
Yeah.
And like, there's like the Pokemon theme song. There's like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yep.
There's like a couple others. I'm like, of course you can. Of course you can. So.
Yeah, you can. You can get those darn millennials.
That's right,
it's
you can.
Just too easy.
Okay. All right. Well, you want to go ahead and get going? Talk about sure. stuff? Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right, everyone. Buckle up. Here we go. We're going into spoilerific territory, even though the episode is almost 60 years old. Yeah, we're continuing our journey with comfort episodes as we go into my selection for the original series era. As the title of this episode probably gives it away, What Are Little Girls Made Of? Yeah. Okay. So, just to recap, if this is your first time kind of tuning in to like these episodes and like these discussions, let me just kind of catch y'all up. We've been going in show chronological order as we talk about these things, where we pick an episode that's particularly meaningful to us for some reason, or just it gives us a certain degree of comfort. For whatever reason, we just kind of talk about it and just kind of see where it takes us, and just appreciating what we can get from each of the different Star Trek shows, basically. So we've already worked our way through Star Trek Enterprise, and you can listen to those episodes. I encourage you to listen to those episodes and kind of hear what we had to say about those. And we recently did David's TOS pick, which was Spectre of the Gun. And now we're on to mine, What Are Little Girls Made Of? Which I remember whenever I first like put this down like in our internal notes, and I think Eric was like, I gotta hear this, man. Like, where are you even going with this? Like, what? And I don't remember if you were the same way or not, but
it seemed a little different. But, you know, there again, I mean, I was questioned for Spectre of the Gun, too, so.
That's true. All right. So, this is a season one episode that we're going to be looking at. And in this episode, we have, the USS Enterprise, you know, Captain Kirk in command, of course. And we're on our way to this planet, and we are looking for someone who has been essentially been determined to be missing or lost or dead or something. Big old question mark on this dude named Dr. Roger Corby. And if that name sounds familiar to anyone that might be in the whole Strange New Worlds kind of era or entry into Star Trek, it's the same dude that Nurse Chapel, Christine Chapel, is going to be, you know, studying with, you know, here at the end of season two of Strange New Worlds. And spoiler alert, they're engaged or were engaged at one point. They had the hots for each other, basically. So Christine has been searching for him, right, for quite some time, and we're still looking for him, and we have some kind of contact to come down.
Spock's totally cool with it, by the way.
Yeah, he's totally fine. He's the X, by the way. we were just listening to that soundtrack not too long ago, actually. Anyway, so we're back on the trail, and we end up beaming down to this planet. And Christine, Nurse Chapel, wants to be part of it and see if she can lay eyes on her her love interest once again. And so we do. We go down there. We beam down to this cave entrance, And but the thing is, even though we have these hints of Corby, he's nowhere to be found at this point. We're just kind of going through this labyrinth of cave systems, and we're met by random people and this giant towering dude at one point named Ruk, which by the way, that actor, Ted Cassidy, is the same guy that played Lurch in the 1960s version of The Addams Family, in case you're wondering if same dude or had any awareness of the dude. By the way, I do find it interesting, just a fun little connection, that we've had two iterations of Lurch actors in Star Trek, by the way. So we had this one. Yeah, we've had this one who played Lurch in the 1960s, Addams Family. And then we had the other guy who played Mr. Hom in Next Gen, who was Lurch in the Addams Family movies.
Okay.
Of the 80s and 90s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. Do with that what you will.
Yeah. Do with it what you will.
Yeah. So we're moving and we're grooving down through these systems of caves, and there's this strange creature, right, that just kills. You're dead type of thing. And we find out that this cave system, as I'm tracking, right, is part of like this extinct race. And there's like this kind of protective factor that's kind of built into some of this cave system for the most part. We find out that there's like some machinery too in these cave systems that can basically create copies of people. And these copies end up being androids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it, not to backtrack too much, but, you know, we'd kind of got the a little bit of the backstory of the planet. Effectively, the surface is uninhabitable. Mm-hmm. So the race who did inhabit it went into the cave system, which then leads to our android thing. But initially when we made contact, you know, Kirk was told, hey, come alone. And, you know, owing to the fact that they didn't meet anybody when they came in, brought some security guards, which unfortunately red shirts, man, red shirts never last.
Gone but not forgotten. Who are you?
It's like that pit just goes on forever. He's most assuredly dead.
Yeah. Yeah, we have androids now, okay? Like, we have androids in TOS, and then we're going to have, like, a... maybe a semi-significant one later on, this little show you might have heard of called The Next Generation. But, you know, not the same thing. Not positronic that we know of.
Yeah, they're made of, like, green goo stuff.
Green goo stuff, yeah. Anyway, so after a little while of roaming through said cave system, this shadowy figure comes about, and wouldn't you know, it's Roger Corby. Corby's there, man, just chilling in a cave, no biggie. And like those star-crossed lovers, man, they're just so happy to see each other. But wait, then it gets interesting, right? Because then there's this like cute, beautiful woman in the cave system too, Andrea, whatever. Like, oh, what's she doing here? Mm-hmm. Do you love her? Do you? Tell me what you really think. Tell me what you want, what you really, really want, type of thing. So, you know, everything's like nice and cordial for a little while, kind of giving them the tour. Like, and in this room, it's this. And in this room, there's this. And hey, let me show you what these buttons can do. And this is where things kind of get interesting. In talking about how these androids are created. And basically, we put some, like, modeling clay on one side of a Lazy Susan, and we put the original, like, human thing on the other part of the Lazy Susan, and then we get up to vomit-inducing speeds.
How many G's?
Until the modeling clay turns into an exact duplicate, like an imprintation of like the personality and things like that. So this happens with Kirk. Kirk is strapped down, you know, and, you know, down to everything like memory, all this other stuff. It's an exact duplicate of Kirk. And ultimately, Corby is like, hey, let's send Kirk 2.0 up to the Enterprise and see if we can basically find a suitable planet to go to, essentially. And it's where he says some things that aren't too kind to Spock up there. Yeah. Little thing about, you know, shut up, you little half-breed. Oh, okay, we're doing this now, okay.
Not perfect replicas.
Not an exact perfect replica. But this is one thing I really liked about what Kirk was doing in this moment. Because he's thinking, you know, thinking about what it would be like to basically call Spock a half-breed. Right? So he's in that moment essentially programming this android to do something that he himself wouldn't do.
Yeah.
More or less. Which is a major tell for everyone that knows Kirk. And just how much, you know, respect and admiration he has for Spock and just his crew in general. Yep. And that he would never, you know, knowingly or freely call Spock, you know, a half-breed or anything like that. So, So as this continues to go on, you know, there's like this, I'm kind of jumping around, but like there's this testing of like the two Kirks at the dinner table. This is before he goes up the Enterprise, of course, but like there's this testing of like, you know, can I get you, man? Like, gotcha. Like, can I get, we're playing the gotcha game and it's just not working. And, you know, trying to prove or trying to see if, like, you know, these androids can go outside their programming, more or less, and start to use this, like, logic of sorts. And you have this, like, kind of convincing, this kind of, like, stuff that's, like, maybe kind of working a little bit with Andrea, but then it doesn't. Like with love, like at one moment she can kiss the guy, but then like slap him, like with no emotion. And then like even in moments whenever you're being chased by Ruck, you know, you're trying to convince him of like their own existence and their own purpose. And like there's this breakdown of stuff. And in these tussles that are kind of taking place, like with different folks, like between Christine and Ruck, or Christine and Corby, or Kirk and Ruck, Kirk and Corby, and whoever else, there's more that's coming to light, right? Like at one point we find out that Corby himself, like through this injury that he sustains, that he was trying to preserve his own life, basically, due to like the frigid temperatures and frostbite, among other things. And he gets some modeling clay and he goes up to 20 G's and, you know, he becomes android himself. And it's the android that we've been working with the whole time.
Yeah.
And this, there's this question of what can these androids do? What are they capable of? And at one point, it's like they're only able to do what they're programmed to do. Right, what their input output kind of stuff is.
Right,
they're incapable of love, and it's in this. I think it's in the climax of this episode when we get to Andrea in front of, you know, Andro, Corby, and Chapel, that she basically is like, "No, I love you," and like, it doesn't end too well. And, you know, they're both destroyed from, like, a phaser blast, basically. So, I really enjoy this episode for a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. And, like, some connections that I have, and I'll get into that in just a little bit. But, you know, when it all ends, you know, you have this, like, kind of short, but I think very pertinent conversation between Spock and Kirk about like the interaction that Spock had and stuff. And you know, he hopes that, you know, Kirk's hoping that he won't do what he did if he finds himself in a similar situation, which, you know, hopefully we don't have more duplicate situations coming up at all in any future series at all. I'm looking at you, Conspiracy. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think there's always been sort of a premise of, I guess it depends on who you are, but like there's going to be a subsection of people who might be interested in this kind of thing as a way to potentially live forever, right? You know, a la like old Elon Musk's neck chip thing, whatever the hell that thing is.
Sure.
And then I guess there's the sort of sci-fi moral dilemma of, could we ever get to a point where we create an AI that truly becomes like truly sentient? Could it feel things and make its own decisions like a human, not based off of programming necessarily, like intuition, right?
Yeah.
And it really is kind of the quintessential sci-fi prompt when you really, really get down into it. And obviously, the exploration with Data over, you know, the seasons of Next Gen and the movies and everything, and then Picard technically as well.
Yeah.
Viewing through that lens, and really so early on we're kind of dealing with that dilemma here and now in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that dream has continued to flourish throughout Star Trek for, well, pretty much the entire time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, David, you know how last time when we were talking about Spectre, you, I really hope I get this right, otherwise it would be embarrassing. You were mentioning, I think it was Tombstone, and mm-hmm. just like Westerns in general were like a big part of your choosing, I think, for your episode.
Yeah.
Or going into it. You know, for me, one of my favorite classic sci-fi movies is Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the 1950s, 56, 55 or 56 version of it. Not the like 70s or even, I think we did something recently like in the 90s and 2000s, but love Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And fun fact, there was a an elective that I took in undergrad called Politics and Film, and we in class, it was like a 3 or 4 hour class, and we would watch movies, do reports on it, and talk about political implications of it. And one of them was actually Invasion of the Body Snatchers. I'm also a Cold War junkie. Part of my undergraduate thesis was on Cold War rhetoric, among other things.
Was it on nuclear vessels?
Nuclear vessels? No, it was not on nuclear vessels. Yeah. I did something much more boring. I actually looked at all the public addresses that Truman and Eisenhower did as, you know, the El Presidente, and how that helped shape American society and just political rhetoric in general involving, you know, early Cold War stuff. So to me, like, this episode just reminds me of that. I think it's a little on the nose, but I just like that. I like how much this reminds me of like one of my favorite movies, among other things. But I think there's also some other aspects to it as well, in terms of, you know, the need for the desire, the at any cost ensure survival type of thing. You know, whatever that means, even if you have to make like kind of desperate kinds of attempts at it. I just kind of, sometimes I like it, it's hit or miss for me, but I really like this episode and kind of how that kind of shakes out. The other thing too is this particular episode is one of the first vivid memories I have of original series in terms of like more than Mantrap and the other popular ones, you know, that we would talk about. This is the one, whenever I think of Star Trek original series, this is the one that always comes to mind for me. So that's, it's kind of like, it's kind of oddball for some folks. It's episode, you know, 7 or 6 or 20, depending, not 20, just depending on like how you, you watch it. But like, you know, it's an early episode. But I think the thing that was like even hitting me recently when I was watching it, just in preparation for this episode, is there's this fight against who you are versus what you desire to become. It's this yearning to be something more, perhaps. And I think it like really kind of hangs out around the space of like the programming. Like she's not capable of love, man. Like she can't do that. Like she only does what she's told, right? Which that's a whole nother conversation. Yeah. By the way, that is a whole nother conversation, which I am not going to get into tonight.
True.
Woo, lordy. But here's the thing. Like, I like that. That even in this... words are hard right now. Why are they hard? This kind of artificially created kind of box, this artificially created kind of lockdown, jail cell, whatever, of something, there's still this push to have critical thinking about something. There's still this push to not just take something at face value. There's still this push to try and be and become something more than you are, or something more than you believe you are, right? And I think that's where the hope comes from in an otherwise kind of maybe not seen as easily episode of original series. So I think those factors just make this episode stand out for me, on top of the fact of this is the episode I think of whenever I think of original series. So I'd love to hear some of your own thoughts as I kind of ramble and pontificate about some of these things, David.
Well, I mean, I would say that, like, I suppose two things kind of come to mind upon the rewatch for me. And I guess the major one here is, like, and it's maybe not necessarily as, like, I don't know, vividly present, but it's kind of like a bit of a parenthesis where we're sort of saying that, you know, these androids, they can't love, right? And you're in the 60s, and all you need is love. Love is all you need. So I think that there's even sort of a subtext in that too, like how pedantic a life would be without the ability to connect and feel love and, you know, just have those basic emotions, which is something that, you know, is explored more with Data later.
Yeah.
And it really in a science fiction, you know, science in quotations dash fiction environment where we really bat heavily for science, but then you also are far beyond us as we sit now as a species, right? Some of the same basic motivators always remain the same.
Yeah.
Family, friends,
yeah,
love, that sort of thing. So it's nice to see it in sort of a subtle way, because, like, you know, the 60s could be a little ham-fisted with that, sure, sort of idea, you know.
Sure.
The other thing is, you really understand why, like, all the crew of whatever Enterprise or space station or anything you're looking at, why they are so suspicious of everything. know? Because, man, oh man, do you get yourself in random encounters. It's like, oh, we found a scientist that's been lost for like 5 years. This is so cool. But we have to be on our guard because you never know what that psycho's been into. And then, of course, it's, you're a bunch of robots. sometimes I think we've given a little bit of flack, you know, at times to, like, the level of suspicion. Or even in the original series, level of, like, almost, you know, the cowboy diplomacy, the certainty of your mission and all that sort of stuff too. But, you know, in the world they live in, which is you know, different because it's dramatized. So it's very different from ours because of the dramatization of things. You have to keep hooked, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, having that sort of thing, it's just kind of, you know, it's like, okay, I mean, you know, you should get it by now. You're getting into a lot of kooky adventures, guys.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Yeah. I do want to give a shout out to Kirk. And I think Eric might potentially say something like this, but like, I mean, just we talk cowboy diplomacy, right? Like you just said that. But like Eric has pointed out time and time before, like how much of a nerd the dude was, like how book smart the guy was, right? And I mean, yeah, he does like his Kirk Fu and like his, you know, stuff and like gets his like shirt ripped in half all the time. But like, this is like some pretty quick thinking and some like higher level intelligence on his part that as he's on the Lazy Susan, you know, he's thinking, like he's using his brain, knowing that this, you know, transfer system or whatever is going to imprint stuff onto this duplicate. And like, that's going to make it very faulty. And I think that's great. I mean, even what Kirk does with Ruck, you know, at one point in like getting him to think, you know, and like in getting Ruck to think about, you know, how can you like kill something that's doing this, right? Like that goes against this other stuff that you were like essentially told to do, to protect, to live out essentially. And I just really like, I really appreciate that aspect of Kirk in this particular episode. Not that he doesn't do it in other adventures that we see with him, but like when you like think about it, it's just solid, quick thinking.
Yeah.
Well,
that, and
yeah,
you're right though. I think, you know, Kirk and the cavalier attitude and everything, sometimes it does get a little lost, and I would even kind of go on to like the newer Trek movies, the Abrams Treks, where essentially you just kind of have a ne'er-do-well, which of course his timeline was affected, so it's not really the same Kirk. I mean, we all get that, but in a lot of ways it's not necessarily showing exactly how smart he is. It's like it's putting on a lot more of the brashness, so to speak. But it is, I think it's important to point out though that, you know, Kirk actually is a very smart individual. You're not a captain for nothing, you know.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, he does have quick thinking moments, but, you know, again, I hate to say it, but like, what is part of the reason why we forget this? Because this show was made in the 1960s and it could be goofy sometimes. Like, I mean, it just popped in my head that like some of the camera shots in this, like the close-ups, and then I usually watch the episode as we're talking to, just to kind of refer back. And there was a shot of like clone Kirk getting into the turbo lift. Mm-hmm. And you see him visibly kind of like shrink to the wall so the camera can just get in this set piece, you know. So little things like that, you know. But we've talked about the budget. The budget was not much, and you know, it was the time. So, but it is important, I think, to point out that it's not just Kirk Fu that this guy did. It's more right. than that. He had a brain.
Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I don't really have too much more to add. I think I'll just kind of reiterate some stuff in terms of like why this is a comfort episode, why this is a meaningful episode to me. I mean, again, this is what I think of when I think of original series out the gate. Not that I don't appreciate other popular ones. I mean, I think the next one up for me would probably be Mantrap. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's probably like, I think the second one that I saw like whenever I would watch original series originally. And I just think of like Star Trek, The Experience, whenever I would go out there to like Las Vegas to like that exhibit, they had like the salt monster like on display at the exhibit. So like that's a connection for me too with that episode. But I don't know. I don't want to be a broken record, but I think like where I'm at right now, like personally and professionally with a lot of things, like things that, you know, I've chatted with you and some others about here and there, just this idea of having critical thinking, thinking for yourself and, you know, looking beyond, you know, who, like the circumstances of like your birth and your surroundings, just really resonate with me, you know, maybe at this age more so than earlier in life. And just like the desire to, pursue truth, to pursue something until the very end, and then kind of hope for the best and, you know, believe that you can change and evolve too. Mm-hmm. I think, again, I've already said it, but I think that's really the hope, like kind of special sauce, right, with good sci-fi, but especially good Star Trek. Like you can have a great sci-fi story, but where's the zinger? Like where's the special sauce that really brings it on home? Yeah. In terms of like applicability and get you to grow and change and consider, you know, considering something from a different perspective. Plus there's a hulking dude, you know, like with a funny outfit, and then, you know, Andre is not too too bad looking either. So
yeah,
there we go. So that's my episode. That's my episode. So anyway, well, we have one more left, and that's of course going to be Eric's, and I won't drop that name yet, that episode name yet. But before we get out of here, I just thought I'd share a Star Trek funny with you and the listeners, and maybe some of the listeners have seen or heard this before. I just want to read this. Someone sent this to me and I just enjoyed it. So here we go. The Federation itself as a concept is so funny because the founding members are the Vulcans, who have been friends with humanity for years, but don't seem to actually like them all that much. Instead, regarding them with a sort of perverse fascination, usually reserved for virology labs. You have the Andorians, who were fighting the Vulcans for like 100 years. The Tellarites, who don't like any of these people and whose cultural trait is arguing. And humans, who nobody knew existed until the last century when they shot themselves into space on a heavily modified nuke, invented world peace, and won a fight with the nearest imperial superpower. Like, imagine you're the Romulan Empire and these weird monkeys who've barely figured out interstellar travel show up on your doorstep in the equivalent of a shipping container with missiles strapped to it, kick your ass in front of everybody, and then start a friendship club with three of your neighbors who all hated each other's guts until like a year ago. Now I understand why every Romulan on the show is so angry. There you go. I got a chuckle out of it. I'm glad that you gave me at least a sympathy one, David. Appreciate it.
No, it was good.
Anyway, well, we're at the end of that. We're at the end of that episode. We'll be back for our final TOS comfort episode here pretty soon. And then we'll be moving on to next gen. We're just trucking right along. And we are now less than a month away at the time of this recording from the season 5 premiere of Discovery. So those recaps will be starting up again soonish. So make sure you join us and stay tuned for our... you know, week to week type of coverage of those episodes. Again, it's the last season, so like we do, we're just going to watch them and just kind of see what it's all about. And again, we hope for the best. Even I know, you know, regardless of the show that we're engaging with, we believe it or not, we do actually like Star Trek. There are just obviously like preferences that we have. And we have, I'll say it again, like we have praised Discovery before. Like it's, we haven't just like flamed it and like crapped all over it, even if it seems like that sometimes. You know, we've praised Picard and Lower Decks and like all of these like newer Star Trek shows. I mean, there are episodes of even like, you know, 60s, 80s, and 90s Trek that I'm not the biggest fan of, but we still like it. Like, we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. So, if you're on the fence with it, you know, just keep an open mind. Infinite diversity, infinite combinations. There's something to be taken from these shows in some form or fashion. So, however you get into the Star Trek fandom, I don't care. Just come on in and then start exploring while you're, once you get in. That's all that matters to me. Hope you enjoy it. David, as always, thanks for jibber-jabbering with me, bud.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man. All right, gang. Well, we're going to get out of here. But, you know, I hope you enjoyed the episode and kind of talking about this robo-invasion of the body snatchers kind of thing, even though we do invasion of the body snatchers again in Next Gen. Again, see conspiracy, by the way. Anyway, hope you enjoyed it. What's been your favorite kind of comfort, meaningful episode? We'd love to hear about that. Or just, you know, kind of what you think of what we've covered so far between Enterprise and you know, original series Star Trek shows. Get in contact with us. Let us know your thoughts. Enter in coordinates to trtvpod@gmail.com if you want to email us. Of course, you can also send us a voice-only transmission to 817-752-4757. Remember, there's a three-minute limit before we get frostbite and have to get on the Lazy Susan ourselves to save our human selves. You know, if you want to mail us something, you know, like, I don't know, modeling clay or those, I don't even know what they were eating, but I don't even know. Whatever. If you want to send us something, you can do that. Lone Star Station, P.O. Box 2455, Azle, Texas 76098. Everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. And as always, remember to boldly go and make it so.